Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to episode 10 of The Hilo, the news and pop culture podcast hosted by writers Pandora Sykes and
Jolly Alderton.
This is our 10th episode. It feels quite seminal, doesn't it, number 10?
Yeah, I'm glad we've got to number 10. Did you think we'd get here, Panda? Did you foresee this?
You said it like we're on like episode 110. Yes, I thought we might see through 2.5 months. I thought we'd be all right.
So 10 episodes, that's been an achievement. What has been your achievements this week, Pandora, in both high and low terms?
What have I been doing this week? I listened to... So we've been compared... The Hilo has been compared a few times, very, very flatteringly, to a podcast in the US called Call Your Girlfriend. So I listened to an episode of Call Your Girlfriend, which is based on the premise that there's two best friends and one lives on one coast, East Coast, and one lives on the West Coast of America, and they catch up on the news that week. And I listened to one of those and loved it, so I've now got 90 more to listen to. I also listened to an episode of Monocycle, Leandra Medine, aka Man Repeller's podcast.
I love that podcast.
She's done one with Drew Barrymore, so I think I tweeted it off the Hilo's account. Never sure which one I tweet off. Tweeted it off the Hilo's account saying, for all of the Josie Grossies out there. And it's a really kind of revealing listen. Drew Barrymore says how she's had a really tough year and she was struggling with anxiety, and I really enjoyed listening to that.
Have you ever watched, there's this famous interview that she did on a chat show when she was about 8 years old?
No. It's, is that around ET time?
Yeah. She kind of flirts with the chat show host and she carries herself with this almost creepy adult charisma, and then everything in her life was kind of so premature. You know, she got into drugs really young, she was smoking really young, and I'm amazed and fascinated that she's come out of it the other side. Obviously I know she had like a very difficult time, but she's a very grounded woman now.
It's a really good episode, though. We'll tweet the link to the podcast on The Hilo's Twitter. If you're not following us, follow us at The Hilo Show.
I am being very active. Did you see when I was hungover, I was posting clips to interviews with Marilyn Manson?
You still haven't quite got the hang of the we in the I.
I know. I'm sorry. I'll get there.
I think it's okay if you don't get there. That's how you can tell the
difference. You can just tell who it is, because it's when it's just a completely random fragment of thought of a sort of mad woman. Then it's me, and when it's something culturally relevant, it's Pandora.
No, that's not always the case. Alicia's attic. I'm also reading a brilliant book, an anthology of short stories by Roxane Gay, who is an American writer. It's called Difficult Women, and it's just breathtaking. It's the best thing I've read in so long, and I can't wait to give it to you, Dolly.
What's it about?
It's quite difficult to give a pricey of this book.
I like that you said that slowly, Pandora. We got an email, which we were very, very thankful for, actually.
I genuinely was, because I go through life constantly mispronouncing words.
And also, it's like the thing when you have something on your face that you should always let someone know. So thank you for the pedant who emailed us to tell us that we were continually saying precy wrong.
Precis, I believe we were both calling it. They've been described as essays about modern American women. I don't really think that does it justice. They are powerful, sometimes mythical essays on humanity. I can't sum it up anymore, and I don't want to sum it up anymore. I want you to go and read it and let it overtake you. And I've also been enjoying the Alexia shapewear adverts.
It's so frustrating because you keep tagging me in them on Facebook and I can't access Facebook.
Because you're on a Facebook detox so you can write your book. So Alexia shapewear, if anyone else hasn't had these sponsored to the high heavens and back again on their Facebook and social media channels, Alexia shapewear are these bras that you stick onto the front of your tits, and then you pull this sort of like silken corsetry and it jams your tartars together. And it's disgusting to look at, and I believe largely improbable. And I'm obsessed with watching them.
But also, if your boob has any sort of weight,
boob,
it will not
singular.
The fashion singular.
I was going to say, like, the lip and the trouser.
If your boobs have any sort of weight, they are not going to be cradled by that silken corset.
Maybe you should pitch a story to a national newspaper of your choice.
I feel like I'm spending my entire life escaping that inevitability of my career.
Dolly, what have you been up to this week?
I haven't read a page of anything this week because I got completely hooked on S-Town, which is the new podcast series from This American Life.
Is it better than Serial?
Personally, I think it is. I think you might think it is as well, because if you're after a kind of forensic, gripping thriller murder mystery...
I wish you could see Dolly's hand gestures.
I know, I'm talking like an Italian.
There's a lot of, like, boxing movements.
If you're looking for that, then you will be disappointed with it. But it begins with a man in Alabama who is in a town called Woodstock that he calls Shit Town. And he emails someone at This American Life and says, I have two really big stories for you about uninvestigated murders that I think you should uncover in Shit Town, Alabama. And then someone from This American Life forms a relationship with this man. And then he goes to Alabama. And I don't want to give you any spoilers, but...
Sounds a bit like Catfish.
It is the most revealing... I think it's the best podcast I've ever listened to. John Ronson said the same.
Except this one.
Except for this masterpiece. It ends up being a kind of complex unravelling of so many social issues, and it's a very human story. Please listen to
it. Thank you for that, Bracey.
Very good use, Candy.
I absolutely will. I had completely forgotten to check that out.
I think it's actually now
number one on the charts.
Usurped Serial in terms of its downloads. I think it's had like 80 million downloads, I think.
Maybe 40 God.
Million. I can't remember. But it's, I think, 4 hours. It's done in chapters. And I did that entire thing in one sitting in one afternoon. So I was listening to that. I also finally caught up on The Trip to Spain, which is an amazing kind of improvised half mockumentary, half documentary, half sort of sketch show between Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon. The first one was in Yorkshire, which was brilliant. The second one was in Italy, which was great. And then the third one I actually think is the best series that they've done. And it's much kind of darker, and it's about aging and success and death. Death really hangs over it, but in this very comic way.
I'm sure I read something about it in The Observer. Are people confused as to whether it's like fact or fiction? And
I think
is it a blurring of?
It really is a blurring of. And from someone who...
A bit like Larry David stuff.
Yeah, exactly. From someone who, when I worked in reality TV for years and years, the big question was, how do we turn up the dial of television, of constructed reality TV, to blur those lines even further of what is scripted and what isn't? And the number of shows I worked on and the taster tapes that I made where it just didn't quite work, because TV producers would think they're doing this really kind of boundary pushing thing, but audiences would just feel a bit mugged off and a bit confused, and they kind of just wanted to know what was real and what wasn't. But The Trip, I think, is the only one that has successfully done it so seamlessly and created a genre of itself.
I sometimes feel a bit mugged off when I watch the programme that you used to be a producer on. I can tell they're taking me for a ride.
Is that still... Apparently the series is very good. Is that still going?
Yeah, it's making me angry. So I'm sure that your old colleagues would say it's having the right...
It is, exactly.
The right impression.
Yeah, so that's what I've been absorbed in. And Ed Sheeran was on one of our favourite radio shows, Desert Island Discs, on Radio 4 this Sunday.
He's so polarising, Ed Sheeran, isn't he? I will listen to that.
It's so funny, because I just didn't even know he was really a thing.
What?
Like, when she was giving the intro, because it's this real special deluxe bumper
I love
edition.
I love you for stuff like that. Like, what does that even mean? I just didn't realise Ed Sheeran was like a thing.
I didn't realise she was like, you know...
She?
Kirsty Young.
It's a man, Ed Sheeran.
Oh, I was listening to the wrong thing. Kirsty Young was like...
Edwina Sheeran.
In the intro, was like, and you currently have 7 singles in the top 10. I was like, Dolly, that
was so good. Have you practiced that?
Of course, every day.
With
in
your
the shower,
hair brush.
When I'm pretending to introduce myself.
Yeah, no, he's phenomenally successful.
I had no idea.
Did you not listen to the hilarious takedown of sorts of his album on Seriously? That's the New Statesman's
podcast.
Yes, I
did listen.
Podcast.
That was a very good takedown.
Yeah, they're
about
quite,
the
they're
nice
quite
guy
mean.
Thing. Yeah. But it's very good because
I like
also,
his music because I'm basic as fuck.
Some of his music choices are very good. And I think he comes across, he's very wise and he's really likable. Kirsty Young doesn't shy away from kind of asking the question of how has someone who looks like you ended up transcending all
life
norms of fame to become as big as you are. And they also talk as well, they kind of talk around it about how he got too caught up in drugs and girls and booze
drugs.
At the beginning of his career. Yep.
Did he? There is that amazing picture of him gurning. Do you remember from a few years ago?
Well, obviously
he's coming
not.
Out.
Never seen it.
Again, well, yeah, because you didn't really know much about Edwina Sheeran before you listened to him on Desert Island Discs. There's if you Google kind of Ed Sheeran wasted or something, this picture about 2 years ago, and it's quite an epic find. And poor man, it's the picture that all of us have buried somewhere, and Ed Sheeran's unfortunately made the front of many national newspapers. I found out something I think you'll enjoy this week. I tweeted it, but you haven't been on Twitter, so I have to repeat it.
Oh, tell me.
I weigh the same as Frankie Dettori.
Who's Frankie Dettori?
Is this a joke?
No.
Shut the fuck up. It's not a joke.
No. I've told you, a footballer.
Probably the most famous jockey to have come out of the UK.
I don't know anything about sports.
But neither do I. Okay, if anyone else out there thinks it's odd that Dolly doesn't know who Frankie Dettori is, can you email us?
Please send us many emails berating me because I really enjoy those.
He's a really famous Italian jockey, Frankie Dettori. Everyone else who has heard of him can enjoy that I weigh the same as
well,
him.
Well, I weigh the same as the baby elephant currently doing the viral video rounds on Facebook. So that's another fact.
We are introducing a new segment to the Hilo called The Top Line.
The Top Line is your quick fire update of 10 things, both high and low, that have happened this week and is in no way inspired by The Week magazine.
Hashtag obsessed. And we thought it would be fun if we're going to alternate each week, if we try and do it in 90 seconds.
What was his name from Countdown, the host? Richard Whiteley. I'm going to be your Richard Whiteley.
You can always
today.
Be my Richard Whiteley. So you're the Richard Whiteley to my
Carol Vorderman. Twice nightly Whiteley. Right, 90 seconds on the clock, Charlie.
Patrons of the Metropolitan Museum in New York are furious that celebrities such as Bella Hadid and Marc Jacobs were photographed smoking in the loo at the Met Gala and have called for them to be fined. It's Mental Health Week this week, and Theresa May has not only announced plans to scrap what many consider a flawed Mental Health Act, but she also pledged to recruit 10,000 new NHS staff to the mental health sector by 2020. Former Sun editor and Sun columnist Kelvin McKenzie is set to be fired from his column for comparing the footballer Ross Barkley to a gorilla. Donald Trump updated his Twitter banner to a picture of lots of white people doing a thumbs up, overlaid with one of his own tweets denying collusion with Russia. Very effective. According to the TV show The Doctors, matching your lipstick to your nipple colour is the best way to find the right lipstick because your nipple colour is complementary to your skin tone. Alexa Chung launched a teaser video for her eponymous clothing line, which is launching on May the 30th, causing Instagram to implode. A law in France banning the use of unhealthily thin fashion models has come into effect. Models will need to provide a doctor's certificate attesting to their overall physical health with special regards to their BMI. If found guilty, employers could face up to 6 months in jail. There's a new Instagram food craze in town. Cloud eggs involve separating the whites from the yolk and whipping up the whites to look like adorable clouds. Jesus weeps.
10 seconds on the clock!
Idris Elba did an open casting on his Instagram and the police had to be called because thousands of people descended upon Hackney. And lastly, another week, another airline scandal. This time it's in Florida and there were full-on brawls after Spirit Airline cancelled 130 flights. Sorry, 300 flights. I'm quite sweaty. And that, my friends, is the top line.
I feel like maybe there were some pacing issues there, Pandora, but I'm very impressed.
And thank you. I was quite good with my pacing.
Thank you to my glamorous assistant, Charlie Jones. have you looked at those egg cloud things?
Yeah, they are quite pretty. Have you seen them?
Disgusting.
Out of all the things I included in the top line, they had more coverage than any other story, which is sad.
But also, have you seen that what you have to do is separate them and then whip the white and then bake the white and then cook the yolk and put the yolk in the middle?
Yes, I did see that.
It's got the time.
Well, I quite agree, yeah.
Also, I'm interested, what colour would your lipstick be, Pandora?
Oi, oi. Just having a look.
Your top see-through anyway.
Is it?
No, words.
I'm calling it Dusky Rose. You?
Very nice. I'm going to go for, I don't know if I'm quite dusky enough, Rosebud. Have you managed to see it? I googled manically and I couldn't find any pictures of the new Alexa Chung collection.
I thought you'd be quite into
that.
I
was so interested in what it looks like.
I think it's under lockdown until May the 30th. I haven't seen it, but I've had word from someone that has that it is very Alexa and very expensive.
Is it called Dressage? Did I read that?
No, it's called Alexa Chung.
There's something about dressage somewhere.
That's what you do when you ride horses. I know you don't know much about sport.
No,
but it's
I swear it said dressage.
Yeah, no, it's because in the video she does... Do you know what dressage is?
Yeah, horses.
Oh, right. Okay, great. I mean,
not know the most famous dressage competitor.
No, he's not a dressage. He doesn't do dressage. But that's amazing. Frankie de Torrington.
Antonio de Torres. Honest. Frankie de Shetland pony.
No. This poor, poor man. You bastardised him.
I'm thrilled to hear about the Prime Minister's pledge to mental health. I think that's really exciting news. Less thrilled about Trump's very Trump banner.
Yeah, when it comes to social media rather than his presidency, he is the gift that keeps on giving.
Let us know what you think of the top line. I rather like it. I've learnt loads. Don't need to read the paper anymore.
You definitely still need to read the paper. You'll be doing next week's.
Oh,
so,
God.
You know, you can jibby jab at me about my pacing, but I'd like to see
my
you.
My pacing will
I'd
be
like
terrible.
To see you rise the okay. I can tell that you're going to just pour with sweat.
Oh, I'm going to pour with sweat.
I got quite sweaty too.
And I'm going to just blabber on, I can tell. So before we go on to our favourite stories of this week, I wanted to read a few emails in response to last week's episode. Also, just want to let you know that moving forward, we won't be able to respond to all emails we receive in the Hilo inbox.
We really wanted to do this. We really did. But Dolly and I both have diverging and heavy workloads. I know it's really boring when people talk about how busy they are, but
it's actually not even so much about busyness. It's just they suddenly have rocketed how many we get, which we're so thankful for. And
we brag.
No, but as in it is. And we just don't have the time to reply to all of them. So thank you so much for writing to us. We will reply when we can,
and we'll continue to read some out each week.
And we do read every single one. Both of us do. Listeners might remember Matt Hay, who had the number 44 in his email address last week, who was based out in the Falklands. So he's replied with, "Hello, Dolly and Pandora. I'm afraid I'm going to have to disappoint you on two counts. I'm neither 44 nor single. It was actually my girlfriend, Anna, who got me listening to your show when we were on holiday in Scotland earlier this year. I'm 26 years old, and the 44 in my email is simply to differentiate me from many other Matt Hayes out there. I'm sorry, Dolly, if I implied an interest that wasn't there. I sent the email to you because you're always saying that the High Lows Gmail account is your domain while Pandora mans the Twitter feed. Cheers, Matt." That's the universal fob off. Cheers.
Poor man, he's terrified that you're somehow going to track him down in the... in the Falklands. For those of you that didn't listen to last week's episode, where were you, you mongrels? Dolly, jokily, or very seriously, depending on how you saw it, asked Matt to get in touch and, you know, to discuss romantic things. How are you feeling about this? Very good of you to read it out on the Hilo, to mop up your...
I just found it so funny. I thank you, Matt, for breaking it to me gently, and somehow I will love again.
That's a very classy response. So here's another one. This is from Kate in response to the letter we read out last week from the girl who couldn't get over the mistake she made at work. "Hi, Pandora and Dolly. I once mistakenly drunk texted my boss a message about her to her, and it was the most devastating feeling ever. Not only because it was so unprofessional, but because it was a really shitty self-indulgent rant, which she'd done nothing to deserve. It still makes me feel sick to my stomach, and I always recheck now when sending messages. It also made me grow up a bit."
I just thought it's so important to read that out because, first of all, nothing can beat that in terms of a mistake. I mean, it makes me feel sick reading that.
I think I've done that before, actually.
I've done a similar thing. Yeah. But also, just to remind you that this is the rich and diverse tapestry we call life, and we all learn along the way. On to this week's biggest news: the new French president.
Mais oui. Thank God, some good news for world politics as Emmanuel Macron. I feel like
How do you do it?
Well, like, you sound like such a dick if you go Macron. Know. Have you heard of that man, Emmanuel Macron?
How are we? We need to decide the
Macron
house style.
Macron.
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 Macron. The 39-year-old centrist candidate who only founded his party en marché a year ago. He won the French presidential election over Marine Le Pen, the very right-wing candidate.
Obviously, this is very good news for France and good news for the world.
Good news for the world, yeah.
Particularly, we needed it. But I've also seen lots of tweets saying this is just another example of how the French do things better than the English. You know, there's always a kind of Lou book out, or there's a new article being like, the French women are better mothers, French women are better in bed, French men are better lovers. It's like they do politics better, they do everything better than us.
I heard that as lube book.
Lube book.
God, that's a very specific book, an entire book about lube. I don't think they do enthusiasm better than us. You know, you could say to a French person something really exciting, they go, oh, how wonderful.
God, that's a very good, it's a bit allo, but it's... I like that panda.
Anyway, there was a lot of hope pinned on this, wasn't there? And it felt like everyone was really depending on Macron, at least in liberal circles, to atone for the sins of Trump. And my French friends were very active on social media, obviously, and there's been a lot of memes. I was fascinated by the whole thing, a lot more than our own politics. Partly because the Le Pen family is just extraordinary. So Marion, Marine's niece, is only 27 and more hardline than she is. Well, she was. She's been accused of backtracking by the right since. I read this amazing profile on her a couple of weeks or months ago. I can't remember, in the Times magazine, which was really scary. And Marine's father, Jean-Marie Le Pen, famously denied the Holocaust. And he gave this extraordinary interview a few days ago where he said his daughter was not fit to be president. They have a pretty weird relationship, to be fair. He was actually expelled from the Front National Party that he founded and that Marine distanced herself from during the campaign to try and win. Anyway, the Front National, in the week of Marine's failed bid for presidency, is renaming itself. So it's going to regroup. Needless to say, Marine is not president. It is a blow to the right. And it feels like Macron stands for a lot of what we hoped a president, any president, would stand for in 2017. He's neither left nor right, which I think is quite crucial right now as politics become increasingly polarised. I know everyone, not everyone, but New Labour used to get such a ribbing for kind of not, do you know what I mean, not being too right to be left. But I think as politics become increasingly polarised, I feel kind of much happier that someone who's centrist is getting into power. And he's firmly on the left on social issues, which is really important to me.
And so, economic as well.
Yeah, so on the freedom to practice religion in a secular state, on equality, immigration, he's very much someone that resonates with my politics.
And he's only about 6 months older than both of us.
I know, I saw myself completely caught out / nailed by a journalist who tweeted, Macron is only 39, is the new Lord is only 20. And I'd literally just written a tweet bemoaning that Macron was only 9 years older than me. I'm more obsessed with that than the fact that he only founded his party in April 2016.
Do you think he's sexy?
On to the important stuff.
That's what we're here for, let's be honest. Do you think he's sexy?
A journalist tweeted, now let's get to the serious stuff. Who is sexier, Trudeau or Macron? And I obviously replied and said Trudeau.
Yeah, I'd say Trudeau, but I'd say Macron comes a close second. I texted my mum and I said, do you think Macron is sexy? And she said, I'm on the fence, but I think his wife is really sexy.
Do you think this is a bit of double standards?
What?
Like, well, you know, we were up in arms over Legsit, but we're having sort of half genuine conversations about who's sexier, Trudeau or Macron.
Because I think it's...
There's no precedent with that.
I think the gap is so wide between
that we can do a bit more,
that women get in the public eye than men. Like, no one's running Legsit pieces on Macron, so we are allowed in this corner of our podcast to talk about whether he's foxy, because we've also talked about what a brilliant and...
Welcome.
What a brilliant and welcome president he is. So, yes, I feel fine talking about it. I said to my mum, do you know what? She said, no, I think his wife is sexier.
Oh, Brigitte, she has had then, much.
I know. Much, but then my mum was like, I'm also really excited about the fact that she's the same age as me. So this has obviously been a
big story. Because your mum can get a 39-year-old lover.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, mum, that's...
Watch out, Tony. That's the take home.
I've been quite fascinated by this story, not least because... of the story itself, but also how it's been reported. I find it very interesting that French media just do not seem to be that bothered by this.
No.
And it really shows their indifference, I think, the difference between like if that was here, can you imagine it would all...
Well, I read something saying that the French are completely nonplussed about the age difference. What they find really revolutionary is that he is loyal to his wife. That he doesn't cheat on her. I find it a slightly odd story. Do you want to do a précis for the listeners at home?
She is a teacher and she was his teacher. They met when he was 15. He actually was in the same class as one of her daughters. They were the same age. She has three children. And then he says that he instantly fell in love with her. She's 25 years her senior. And at 17, he went into her classroom and said, "You may not know it yet, but I'm going to marry you. And this will be our love story." And then they got married and they've been together 20 years.
Left her husband for him. Yeah. I mean, famously, they are the same age differences, Melania and Donald Trump, but inversed. So the 24 years is flipped between the sexes. I think it's slightly odd that they met when they were 15 and her kid was in his class, because, you know, this would have been a huge scandal if it was the other way around. I know it's all fine and whatever now, but I think that one of the dangers in the kind of engendered dialogue we have in society, and I actually retweeted something that someone wrote, I don't want to name him, about
We're not naming him
on the podcast. about needing to man up, and I said it's this engendered rhetoric which leads to suicide being the biggest killer of men under 50, as they feel the pressure on them to be a certain way. So I think, you know, if the boot had been on the other foot, then there would have been much more up in arms about it. And I just don't think we can forget that young men are vulnerable just as young women are. Anyway, so I do find that slightly odd, but I thought it was interesting what he said to Le Parisien newspaper. So many words testing me today. Emmanuel Macron addressed speculations about his sexuality and what he described as parallel lives. He said if his wife was younger than him, nobody would question the validity of their relationship. If I had been 20 years older than my wife, nobody would have thought for a single second that I couldn't be her partner. It's because she's 20 years older than me that people say this cannot be tenable, it cannot be possible. He claims that reports are due to misogyny and people ascribing traditional homogenous views about society. I totally agree with him on that, but I don't think that's all people were talking
about. I think we're agreed. And Zoe Williams did a very balanced piece for The Guardian about this, where she said it can't be ignored that she was in a position of authority. It can't be ignored that how this would be reported and how this would be viewed and digested if it had been a male teacher. But she also said that after 20 years mm-hmm. of marriage, you would hope and assume that gap has closed and that was authentic love rather than... and that it
taking
is,
advantage.
Yeah, and that it is yes. consensual.
It certainly seems that.
And the other thing she said is exactly what he said, is that this ageism plays really, really prevalently in the subject of sexism. And... you know, the fact that people are reporting that she's a beard simply because no one could ever understand why a man would be attracted to a woman
who is very foxy, is every, you know.
Yeah, who's over... but basically, in our kind of commercial dialogue now, it's women over 40. It's like, if you're over 40, you're not attractive enough to be on television. That's... and you're not attractive enough in our consciousness.
I interviewed Jennifer Connelly once, who is, Hollywood actress, for those of you like Dolly who might be a little bit behind on your pop culture. And she said that when she turned 40, she noticed a real gear change in the scripts she was being sent, and it was like she'd aged
completely
10 years.
You play the mothers.
Yeah, she said, why does it have to be so binary? Why do you have to be the ingenue or the old lady? Why can't you just be this kind of still sexual but, you know, slightly more wrinkles, a few more years under your belt?
You know, people are still calling Michael Douglas a bloody silver fox. That's where the inequality lies with it.
Very well said.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mm-hmm. Eurovision.
So this weekend is my favourite competition event of the year, other than Crufts and Rear of the Year, sponsored by Wizard Jeans, the press photos of which I subjected Pandora to last week.
We love Rear of the Year. John Barrowman.
So it is, of course, Eurovision. It's happening this Saturday night, and this year we have X Factor contestant Lucy Jones, and she will be our 60th act to represent the
60th.
UK. No. At the final in, help me out here, Pandora.
Kiev.
Is that Kiev?
Kiev, not Kiev. Oh, it's Kiev.
It's the same. It's just how they spell it in the
Ukraine. Right, producer Charlie has informed us that Kiev is the same as Kiev.
Oh, that's very gracious of you. I was like, maybe we just cut all that out. No, let's keep it in. We're all for getting things wrong and asking questions on the high low. Anyway, it's in the Ukraine, and she's singing a stripped-back pop ballad called Never Give Up On You. Are you a Eurovision fan, Panda?
I'm a big fan of the phrase stripped back pop ballad. I used to be a fan of Eurovision. I confess I have not watched it in recent years.
I'm completely obsessed with Eurovision. There was this very hazy night a few years ago where my friends were all round for dinner and then we hadn't realised Eurovision was on. As it started, we were like, let's play a Eurovision drinking game. And I think it
That's why you love it. Oh, Everyone who loves it. Eurovision loves it because it reminds them of the halcyon days of being inebriated.
Yeah, no, I loved it. And I loved it when I was younger. I loved Terry Wogan's very wry commentary. Graham Norton's hilarious. I love Graham Norton doing it. It feels like a real communal experience. I love the Twitter commentary that always happens alongside it. I love the earnest joy. It's so inelegant. It's not. It's the opposite of chic. None of the lyrics quite translate into English, which I just love as well. There's a whole website that gives you some of the weirdest kind of translations of idioms. And there's a real sense of fellowship and respect as well, which I really like. Do you have any entries that you remember particularly well?
Definitely just a little bit, a little bit more by Gina G. I remember roller skating around the roller skating rink to that.
Conchita, the bearded lady, was of course a standout and quite prescient as well of a time of gender non-binaries and fluidity being discussed much more. And that was a few years ago.
Yeah, giving something much more to the conversation than just a terrible song, which is what Eurovision...
And we cannot not mention Katie Price, of course.
Oh my God, a highlight if ever there was one, and there was because this is it. Although, of course, she didn't actually make it to Eurovision. She put her bid in 2005 to be the entry for the UK whilst wearing a bubblegum pink latex catsuit.
I remember very clearly in 2009 the Norwegian winner Alexander Rybak actually had a very catchy song.
How did that one go? I'm in love with a fairy tale, even though it hurts, 'cause I don't care if I lose my mind, I'm already caught.
It's actually the kind of song that I imagine you listening to at home, Pandora, when you're entertaining.
I can't tell if that's a diss.
No, it's a really nice pop song. It's really good. So some Eurovision trivia for you. None of the 1956 voting is known, other than the winner being Switzerland. In 1964, the Danish hosts managed to lose their video of the contest, meaning that no recording of the event exists. The 1968 contest at the Royal Albert Hall was the first to be broadcast in colour. Mm. In 1974, the United Kingdom gave Nil Point to ABBA, and all Eurovision songs must be longer than 3 minutes.
ABBA? God, how really, really odd of us.
I know.
Britain fucking loves ABBA, but clearly didn't at the time.
I know. We have a mutual friend, and I have texted her asking for permission to tell this story. Laura Atkinson, who is the deputy editor of the Sunday Times
I don't know
Star
what the story
magazine.
Is. Have you actually texted her asking permission?
Yes, I said, do you mind if I talk about this? She is so obsessed with Eurovision.
I did know she's obsessed. Hasn't she been before?
She bought a ticket. And I think I asked her for confirmation of this other fact and she didn't reply. And I take her silence as embarrassed yes. I said, did you camp outside the arena? and she didn't reply. And I do remember her saying...
Where did she go? Where was it? Bratislava?
It was somewhere... Yeah, I cannot remember. It was not near home. But when she said to me, I went to Eurovision, I was like, oh, on a press freebie. And she was like, no, I bought really expensive tickets.
That absolutely doesn't surprise me.
So that's one of
the
many reasons we love her. This year, things apparently might turn a bit nasty because people have predicted that we're going to suffer because of Brexit and...
I don't think there'll be any difference because
EU countries
we always get punished. Even pre-Brexit, we do terribly every year. All the Eastern European countries always whack each other up whilst we sort of dawdle miserably with like 3 points and some failed five boy band member with a goatee being our entry. That's the reality. Brexit or no Brexit.
I found it so funny when in the fallout of the referendum, there were certain people on Facebook who were so worried about whether we would be able to compete in Eurovision. And also those people who seemed to think it now meant we weren't a part of the continent of Europe, as if we now had to like move to a different continent. But it got to a point where so many people were talking about Eurovision around Brexit that I think David Cameron even commented, and he said something like, if Azerbaijan are allowed to compete, then we'll be allowed to compete.
So we're the new Azerbaijan?
We are, yeah. It's handbags at dawn in the literary world.
So it's a true case of literary friction.
Very nice. So Joanna Trollope has slammed her fellow author J.K. Rowling for her prolific utilisation of Twitter, comparing her to Kim Kardashian. The Independent reports, I don't do anything on social media deliberately. A lot of authors are quite suited to it, but I'm not, Trollope said. Some writers like J.K. Rowling have this insatiable need and desire to be out there all the time, and that's entirely driven by their ego, she continued, singling the Harry Potter author out. My view is that I'm saying everything I need to say in my books. Creating this mass following and tweeting several times a day is like wanting to be Cheryl Cole or Kim Kardashian.
I've always felt very sorry for Joanna Trollope with her surname because it really lends itself well to tabloid headlines, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe this is, again, a case of nominative determinism here, Trollope.
What, her being a bit of a Trollope?
Yeah. Mm. So there have been lots of various opinion pieces on it, mainly criticising Joanna Trollope's kind of quite old-fashioned narrow-mindedness on it. I particularly like Catherine Hughes did a piece with The Guardian, who said, having a colossal ego is, after all, an entry-level requirement for being a writer. Which I must agree with. If you think that what you have to say and what the stories you have to
is
tell
valid.
Are valid, then it means you've got a fairly large ego already. She goes on, in this piece by Catherine Hughes, she goes on to say she feels nothing but envy for J.K. Rowling because she says that she seems to have this inexhaustible supply of words, and that while lots of writers use Twitter as a distraction from their work, it seems that she somehow makes it an extension of her work. Like, all her tweets are really well thought out and they always have a really pertinent message. But she also says that she's using it for very brave, I think, succinct political commentary. She will call out Brexit just as surely as she will someone who's made a nasty comment about the tennis star Serena Williams with a commendable indifference as to whether she alienates her wider fan base. She will trash talk anyone who threatens to burn her books simply because she's been rude about Trump. What do you make of this feud, Panda? Where do you stand?
God, that sounds like a brilliant article by Catherine Hughes. I haven't read it. I will read it and we'll put it on the High Lows Twitter. I love her reference to Serena Williams because I think that came from someone tweeting that Serena Williams looked like a man in a dress, and she retweeted it and was like, I'm sorry, but my husband does not look like that in a dress. I love Joanna Trollope as well, trying to compare J.K. Rowling, a woman who literally took herself off the rich list because she's donated so much to charity, to Kim Kardashian. Yeah. And I'm not sure what Cheryl Cole has to do with it either. I think this is really disappointing. Each to their own. Don't do social media if you cannot use it as an effective tool. J.K. Rowling can and does, as Catherine says. And she's one of my favourite people to follow on Twitter. She's a real bastion of the high-low theory.
She is.
As well. There are entire articles dedicated to her tweets.
I think that Joanna Trollope is showing herself up as being a bit behind the times here. I think she's decided that the role of the writer is that you have to be invisible, you tell your stories, you hide behind a page, you send them out into the world and then you kind of go away. But I do understand how some writers would feel that to be on Twitter or to have a personal voice is breaking the fourth wall, ruining the illusion and bringing the audience into reality too much. But when you're someone who has as much of a following as she does, particularly with young people, you know, she has over 10 million Twitter followers.
God.
To not use that platform to say something important, I think would be a criminal waste. And I think beyond her role as a political commentator as well, I think she's providing something really magical for her readers. People who've read Harry Potter and any person who's young reading a book, those books become part of your inner world forever. They become a piece of you. And I think, you know, part of the reason that all this conversation started up is that she posted a discussion on Twitter where she was talking about why she killed off the character Severus Snape in the book. And I think that's something that really riled Joanna Trollope up. But if you think back to when we were kids and we were really avid readers, if Jacqueline Wilson had done a Twitter Q&A and given loads of facts about Tracy Beaker, or Louisa M. Alcott had been talking about the March sisters, I think that would
be... Ina Blyton did a Facebook Live.
Yeah, but I just think we would have loved that. Can you make...
Apparently Ina Blyton was a real cow, though. Sad to
she find
that
she wouldn't have been
out.
Doing Facebook Live. I think it's a very magical thing that she's doing.
I was interested by your point about what you're saying about using your platform for good, because that taps into something that I wrote on my website last week about saying that I've felt like celebrities should be compelled to be more open with their views, because I was bored of it just being endless sort of press puffery. Can I see the questions in advance? Can I see the copy? You can't ask this. And someone actually tweeted me back saying, if a celebrity was my client, I would advise her, come hell or high water, to keep her mouth shut so she doesn't alienate half her audience. And I replied going, the risk of alienating half your audience is not a reason to not air your views. That is to do with integrity. You know, I'm sorry.
But we live in a world where there's just integrity has no stock.
Must appeal to as many people as possible and make as much money as possible.
But you
which
get
is
approval
not...
of people all the time.
And that's not where J.K. Rowling stands.
No.
And that's why I love her. I also fucking hate it when women have these catty bitch fights in the public eye, because I just feel like it really perpetuates this idea that women literally do have handbags at dawn.
I know, I sort of hated myself for saying that at the top.
No, but it's true. It is. It's, you know, saucer of milk for table two. That whole, you know, they're cliches for a reason. And it links in nicely, actually, with another quote-unquote celeb feud this week, where it was going to be in my top 10 until we were discussing that we were going to talk about this. And I thought, I'll slide it further down. So Katy Perry has really opaquely, i.e. it makes no fucking sense, addressed her feud with Taylor Swift for the nth time in an interview with Entertainment Weekly to promote her new album. She was asked if it was in any way a riposte to Bad Blood, Taylor Swift's song that was allegedly about her. And she says, well, I think that's not my question to answer if it's about me. I think my album is a very empowered record. There is no one thing that's calling out one person. One thing to note is you can't mistake kindness for weakness, and don't come for me, anyone. And that's not any one person, and don't quote me when it is, because it's not. It's not about that. Honestly, when women come together and they decide to unite, this world is going to be a better place. Period. End of story. But let me say this. Everything has a reaction or a consequence, so don't forget about that, okay, honey? We've got to keep it real, honey. I feel like I'm reading modern poetry.
You're reading it a bit like, did you watch Aisling in Big Brother? You better know yourself, little girl.
It's a bit like that.
She's not got a lot of, you won't like me saying this, she's not got a lot of pals, Taylor Swift, has she? Fellow female singers.
I'm just going to lead a wide open silence. Moving on to Ask the Hilo. Thank you for your emails this week. You can email us thehiloshow@gmail.com or tweet us thehiloshow.
And we treasure every single one of them.
We do. So this question comes from Emma in Somerset. Hi both, your podcast recently mentioned the cost of books. It hurts to buy a book and not like it. If I don't like it, I give up. Too many books to stick with a rubbish one. For me, libraries are the way forward. Here in the Southwest, we can reserve a book from any library in the same scheme for £1, and more often than not, it's a newbie, so I get a nice fresh book and it's all mine for 3 weeks. If we don't use our libraries, we lose them. I still buy books, but I now have a 50-50 approach to purchase versus loan. That is a salient reminder. Thank you very much, Emma. So she goes on to say, which leads me to ask, do you keep your books or do you move them on to breathe in new hands? I love finding a match for my book, whether that's at the charity shop or even a park bench. Are you keepers or sharers?
I'm a real bitch about my books. I don't like it about myself. I don't like how I am in the kitchen, and I don't like... No, but I... That's because I gave you that book.
No. I just gave Dolly back a book that she lent
that's
me.
That's because I knew that you're very careful with things and that you would give it back.
Yes. So, and I write my name in the front of them like you do.
That's what I
do. And the date that I got them, because my older sister, Enna, always did that. So I always write
Books, for me, I think... I'm quite precious about them. I'm so relaxed about people borrowing clothes or like breaking things. They tell so much a part of a story for me if it's meant something to me, and I fold down the pages of stuff that you know spoke to me, and I would hate to lose those relics of what the actual copy.
And you forget what you've lent out. We both read quite a lot, so we wouldn't specifically remember what we'd read that year. I do lend books out, but I do always say I must get this back.
Yes, that's
and if I know that someone is an exceptionally inefficient reader, I won't lend it out because I might not get it back for 3 years, and that's too long.
I also did this. I used to, when I was younger, write when I was on holiday. Whenever I finished a book, I'd write a note in it, and then I'd leave it somewhere for someone. And then I told this,
like Emma Watson.
I told this at the time to a boy that I was
seeing.
Mad, no,
Stopping.
A wish. I was madly Stopping. In love with, and he told me that it was the most pathetically affected fake bohemia. Hipster nonsense he'd ever heard, and that I needed to get a grip.
He's right, but he sounds like a bit of a bastard.
So this one comes from Anxious in Oz. Hi Dolly and Pandora, I'm currently writing this in a hot hostel room in Cairns, North Queensland, Australia. I left England 6.5 months ago and have had the time of my life. I intend to stay in Australia until October when my first year visa expires, then do some travelling around Southeast Asia, and I would love to come back to live in Melbourne for another year after that. But I feel aware that a lot of my friends at home are heavily investing in their careers and making more permanent life choices. I worry I will get left behind when I return home. I know social media portrays everyone's lives through a rose-tinted filter, but I'm potentially about to pick fruit for the next 3 months in order to come back to this country. Am I just running from real life? I know I'm only 23 years old, but I can't help panicking about this.
Picking fruit is not a euphemism, by the way.
No,
you can actually... Yeah, I remember when I on my gap here, a lot of people picked fruit in Australia and you get paid... minimum wage, and I suppose it funds your backpacking for a bit longer. Mm. So I was interested because when Dolly was first reading this out, I did think, oh gosh, yes, it does sound like your friends are getting on with stuff, and are you kind of delaying the inevitable descent into working adulthood? But then at the end, when you said you're only 23, I think you're fine. I mean,
I completely agree.
I am a bit pathetic. I will never be someone that will just take a year off work and go backpacking around the world, partly because I'm 30 and I did that when I was 18, and it's completely indulgent for me to do it again. But also I was always quite scared about the passing of time and what my friends were doing. I think I am someone that was, and still am, but to a much lesser extent, affected by the old keeping up with the Joneses. So I am someone who lives their life very differently, perhaps, to how you do yours. But I don't think there's anything wrong with you taking some time to discover who you are. I would caution against 2 years is quite a long time. So I would say only do it if you really are going to enjoy it. If we're going to spend the whole time worrying about what everyone else is doing at home, maybe have a happy medium of 18 months. I don't know. I don't want to be too prescriptive, though, because people are very different in the way they choose to live their lives and their careers. What do you think, Dol?
I think... if I could go back and say one thing, one piece of advice to
your younger
17-year-old self.
Oh, what would you say? Only one? I've got about 48.
If I had just one thing to say, it would be travel and stop worrying about your life passing, because
You're right, it always works out.
I considered taking a gap year and then I decided not to. I was 17 when I left school. I'd only been 18 for 2 weeks when I started university. I was 20 when I got my degree and 21 when I got my master's. I was too young. And then I went straight into a job in TV within the first year. And I was so desperate to do stuff quickly. I just wanted to be a grown-up. I wanted to make my own money. I wanted my own career identity. I wanted to be taken seriously. And now the irony is... the thing that makes me sometimes take myself less seriously is that I feel like I have not seen the world. And
how interesting, because I did take a gap year.
I'm and so jealous.
If I'd gone university, straight out of an all-girls school, and had not had that year to meet people from different walks of life and different areas of the globe and have flings. What does areas of the globe mean? Sorry, different parts of the world. And had flings and stuff. Yeah, that was a really crucial year for me. Also, I'm kind of slightly shocked and embarrassed that you entered the workplace, I think, 18 months younger than I did.
But I don't think
there's still time.
Well, the thing is that I used to say to my parents... go see Matt Hay. My parents.
She's not coming, Matt. Chill out. It's all right.
Matt, you can take that double off.
And Matt Hay's girlfriend, it's fine.
I think my mum used to say to me, look, you are very, very young to be doing what you're doing. Why don't, maybe you should go see some stuff and learn some stuff. And I just was so arrogant. I just thought that I could learn it all here. And I thought that one day I might be able to take a year off, and now it would be a complete, I still think, dream about it sometimes, but
I think as a writer you could, maybe when you write your next book.
I could, but it's like a huge expense.
Yeah, and it is.
I'm now at a point where, like, picking,
you don't want
fruit
to stay in a hostel with 24
people.
Yeah,
exactly. But when if I had been in my early 20s, that would have been totally,
yeah, completely
fine. And I also would say, without sounding like someone who has made a career out of calling themselves a guru, and I have particular gripes with those kind of people, the only thing that you can spend money on and will make you richer is travel.
I was wondering what that was. I was thinking, I was like, food, no. Yep, that's a very good point.
I would not be in a rush. And also, even if you get to 30, you know, we all have different paths. I think it's wrong to think that we all need to get married and buy houses. Some people feel safety in different ways. And if you feel safety by seeing as much of the world as possible, and that's what makes you feel alive and free, then do that forever.
Absolutely. I'm on and have followed a pretty conventional path. As Dolly said, rather embarrassingly summarising my entire existence, I am 30 and I am trying to buy a house. But you do not have to do what me or anyone else does. Just make sure that you are enjoying and that you have conviction in your choices.
That's,
I feel
exactly
very strongly about having conviction in your choices.
Yeah.
So one more just for luck. I am so desperate for the loo. I have to share it because I wondered if Dolly could see that I'm in actual physical pain.
Why don't you just say it, then you can say goodbye.
Okay, one more just for luck. This is from Emily. Dear Dolly and Pandora, I am embarking as a graduate HR manager within the largest cruise company in the UK, combining my love of cruising, yes, I'm 80 years old and 22 year old's body,
obsessed,
and people. However, I've only ever had rather typical student jobs like shop assistant, waitress, to name a few, where I had no real responsibility. God, I'd argue that a waitress has so much responsibility, I wouldn't know what to do with it. This will be my first proper job taking on responsibility and being part of a large company. Any tips?
Do you want to go first, Panda?
I will say, yes, I will actually say that I think being a waitress and a shop assistant would be terrifying. I'd be absolutely shit at it. Just, you know, shout out to all the shop assistants and waitresses that might listen to us out there. But I think that's really lovely that you're sort of really want, you're looking at it thinking, you know, how can I build this into my career? And how can I make sure that I really take this as the first step into hopefully a kind of, you know, lifetime vocation? And again, I always worry that we sound patronising because we're old and you're only 22. But enjoy it. Soak it up. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You know, that harks back to last week when we had someone that was so crippled by her own mistake that she was struggling to move forward. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Don't be afraid to enjoy it. But also remember that it is a job. That's all from me. Thanks very much for listening to Hilo. Now Dolly will reply.
What I would say... what I would say to you is try and stay calm and try and be efficient, because the thing with when you get yourself in too much of an emotional whirlwind is that you become sort of incapable. And this happened to me time and time again when I would do work experience, where I would be so nervous and so in my head that someone would say, ask a really simple task of me, just something, photocopying something. And then I'd just stand in front of the photocopy and be like, oh, I actually... I don't know what's paper, what's ink. So I think that if you can just try and stay present and stay calm, then it's much less likely that you'll fuck up. And now we've just got some dead space, but it's just me in the studio on my own. Charlie, maybe I should ask you a few words. How are you enjoying producing the Hilo?
I don't think I should be a personality on the podcast.
Oh, I quite like the idea. You can be like... Will on TFI Friday.
Yeah. People still remember him.
Yeah. I mean, you don't seem too enthusiastic about it. You look like you've got a tan, Charlie. Where have you been?
I suffered sunburn in Gloucestershire on Sunday.
No way.
Yeah.
Where in Gloucestershire were you?
Stroud.
Panda, things have gone wildly off piste. Yeah, I've just been interviewing Charlie.
Oh, just back from a really, really good pee.
You are going to love when you hear that back.
It's so long. What are you talking about? Must have some
water
now.
Charlie was just telling us about his sunburn that he got in Gloucestershire.
Is this part of the Hilo question?
Yeah. No, I finished answering it.
Oh, right.
And then I monologued for a bit, and then I just thought, and then I thought,
instead I just thought you'd just finish the podcast while I was going to the loo.
Oh, no, I thought you should be here to help with the goodbye. So anyway,
thanks very much for listening. Thank you to Acast. Have you thanked Acast?
No, for letting I didn't. I was waiting for us to do it together.
Oh, sorry. Thank you to Acast for letting us use your studio.
Much less hot this time.
I'm pretty red. I just saw myself in the bulk mirror.
Thank you very much, Acast. Thank you very much, Lauren Benstead, for our sexy music.
You can email us, thehilowshow@gmail.com, and tweet us at thehilowshow. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, and please read us a review, because we really enjoy bettering ourselves. No, we just want to get higher up the iTunes
charts. Also, I love reading those reviews. Thank you to everyone who's done them. They give us a real boost.
Yeah, they're very funny. We even enjoy the insulting ones, because they're also very funny. Funny. Thank you very much for listening to episode 10. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.